So I did forget to mention that it's Pajama Sunday. you may have noticed. That's mainly for the folks that are watching from home. If you're wondering why we're in our pajamas, we have this tradition in this center that the Sunday after Thanksgiving, where people might have expanded a bit, and I'm not talking about expansion in consciousness, where they might have expanded a bit over the Thanksgiving holiday, that we invite them to wear their pajamas to church. And I see that we have a lot of people that have expanded, a whole family that has expanded into plaid. So first, a special thank you for Jonna Shane and Dave Flager and their family and their grandma that did the invocation and the little girl who did the, was that Monica? Marilyn, right, who did the beautiful lighting and the reading and all of that. That meant so much to us. And let me know if those start getting low, and I'll blow them out, okay? They're dripless, they'll be okay. All right. And just thanks to Chris and David. Wonderful to have you here today, and all of you. Just great to have you here. Jessica, you never cease to astound me with your beauty and your talent. And now your shirt, it says, Namaste in bed. Okay, which is great. Yeah, Jessica was a good sport, and you know, I believe Jessica told me once that her teacher said, you know, you have to dress for the harp, right? So she always comes all like dressed to the nines, like in formals and whatnot, and she wore pajamas. It's awesome. I love it. Yeah. So it's kind of been a strange Sunday in lots of ways. We were supposed to be doing an interview with someone named Gail Matthews, who is a practitioner here, who works in the field of assisting people that are struggling with homelessness. And she was going to come and speak with us about her work so we could learn more about what's going on and how she also applies these science of mind principles that we teach, these spiritual principles, to her work. Gail had a family emergency and was not able to come. She really, really wanted to be here, and I actually had to talk her out of it and say, no, Gail, your obligation is to your family right now. You don't have to twist yourself into a pretzel to please the church, right? So anyway, I was planning on doing a talk, and then I thought of somebody else that works in that field, and that is someone that you may know. You may know Mary Kerrigan as a practitioner, as a choir director, as a stage manager, as an all-round wonderful person, but Mary Kerrigan also works in the field of helping with folks that are struggling or impacted by homelessness. So rather than me telling her story, I'm going to invite her to come up here and tell her own story, and we're going to talk a little bit about this because, for one thing, it's starting to get cold, and our center is often very involved in assisting people that are struggling with that issue in terms of helping them find warmth or shelter. But also we're starting a special program this Sunday that directly impacts the population that Mary serves, Step Up Ventura, which is a daycare center for children that are impacted by homelessness. So let's give a really warm welcome to Mary Kerrigan as she comes on the stage. Thank you. And I also want to say that Mary found out that she was doing this at like 2 o'clock in the afternoon yesterday. And most people have a little more time to prepare, but she's a pro, so we're gonna just jump right in. So Mary, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and what you used to do, what you're doing now, why you're doing it, all stuff like that?
For over 30 years, I was a clinical social worker. And I originally wanted to be a teacher, but I thought I didn't have enough patience, so I decided to be a psychotherapist.
that requires no patience.
Live and learn.
Yeah, right.
So I thought I was going to be working with college students to help them figure out what they really wanted to do with their lives. But as I started studying mental health, I decided I really wanted to work with children, adolescents, families, and work with very young children. So I ended up specializing in infant mental health. Mm. And that's what brought me to, after deciding no longer to be a psychotherapist, we had moved to Ventura, and it became very aware that children here are impacted by homelessness or on the brink of homelessness. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so I'm now using my skills, my clinical skills around trauma, mm-hmm. and around attachment and secure relationships to work with this population of children and families who are impacted by homelessness or at high risk.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So. Oh, that's wonderful. Thank you for doing that. You know, I don't know if anybody sitting in this congregation has been impacted by homelessness personally. I have not been it myself. I've never faced the threat of homelessness, at least not yet. You know, you never know. But one of the things I've been doing recently in terms of even preparing for this talk was I started watching that Netflix show, Made. Has anybody seen that? M-A-I-D? It's a beautiful program, but it just shows how, I really recommend it if you want to understand homelessness through sort of a more through an art lens, because you know the arts often theater sheds light on the human condition, and it really shows how people are one paycheck, one minute, one ill thought out decision that they just don't know any better because they haven't been exposed to different possibilities. How that is just such a presence and such a condition for some folks that their lives can be disrupted in an instant, and particularly if they're parents and they have a child, that child's life can be disrupted in an instant. So Mary works at Step Up at Ventura, where they help break the cycle of homelessness. And could you say a little bit about that?
Yes, our goal actually at Step Up Ventura is for these children to be ready for kindergarten. Because we know that children who are not ready for kindergarten have an 80% chance of not finishing high school. Mm-hmm. And so what happens with children who are impacted with so many disadvantages very, very early in life, they go to school, they're not ready for kindergarten, they hate school, they drop out of school, they don't have ability to be self-sufficient, and they end up being homeless. Mm-hmm. So when we talk about our program, we talk about it breaking the cycle of homelessness because education has been shown to be one of the ways that people are able to go from very difficult situations to a much safer, healthier life.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And what I was saying before about making poor choices out of ignorance, it's not stupidity. Ignorance is not stupidity. It's just when you haven't been exposed to the variety of resources or whatever that are out there, or even possibilities for our lives, then you tend to continue to make the choices that your parents made or the choices that the people you were around made. And there are many other possibilities that exist. And one of the ways, I'm sure, to open the doors to those possibilities is through education.
Yes, and we do know that children's brains are not really available for learning unless the trauma of what they have experienced is resolved, because trauma affects the brain. And so a lot of our work is to help heal that trauma and then help the children make connections with adults that can help them progress and grow,
right.
And so they're really available for learning. Mm-hmm. So we talk about heal, connect, and learn.
Heal, connect, and learn. Yeah. You provide a safe space so that children have a chance.
Yeah.
I'm gonna cry.
Yeah. I cry every day.
It's too soon for that. I thought I might cry at the end, but not at the beginning. That's so sweet. Thank you. Mm. What is the biggest challenge that you face at your work?
I think the biggest challenge for myself personally is to remain positive about the outcome when on a daily basis sometimes we see such devastating effects of the conditions these children live in. So some of it is being able to kind of rise above the race consciousness hopelessness and people who don't know better won't ever get, you know, be happy, and just be able to hold a higher or a different, more expanded sense of possibility.
Right.
So that's personally, I think the biggest challenge. And, you know, for the children, I think the biggest challenge is learning to trust.
Learning to trust. Their challenge is to learn to trust.
Yes. Their challenge, you know, they've learned at a very young age that the world is not a friendly place. Mm. You know, the world's not a safe place. Big people are not really to be trusted. Mm-hmm. So I think their challenge is to trust us big people,
right,
enough to, you know, to take our help.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's got to be hard. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I want to go back to your challenge a little bit, okay? Because to me, that challenge of what I heard in that was a sense of, is this really making a difference? Mm-hmm. The problem seems really big. Is my small contribution big enough? You know, you're doing marvelous things in this unique place in a small to medium-sized town in Ventura. Homelessness is all over the country. Mm-hmm. And not only for what you're doing, but I think for a lot of things that we do, that we have aspirations for. I mean, I certainly experience it with church. You know, you're going along a certain trajectory, and then a pandemic changes everything, you know. you're raising kids, and something changes everything, and they're not quite turning out like you thought it might, or issues with families, siblings, brothers, sisters, anything that we're dealing with, the spiritual path even. You know, it's like we're here, but we want to be here. And sometimes that brings up a sense of futility. And I'm wondering, can you say anything more about, I mean, do you feel a sense of futility at times, and how do you deal with it?
Every day.
Every day, okay. Okay.
You know, before I walk on to the grounds, you know, sometimes they say, well, I don't know what the crisis is going to be. I mean, I know there's going to be probably a crisis,
okay,
something, you know, difficult.
All right.
You know, it's just who it is.
But yeah.
But, you know, I think a lot about science of mind principle, that mm-hmm. intention mm-hmm. is different than goal.
Right.
You know, and our goal is for all of these children to be kindergarten ready and mm-hmm. to have success mm-hmm. in education and success in life. And that's our goal. And if I only think about that, then I could think, oh, my gosh, well, this is just, you know, this is 120 children. Think of all the children in L.A.
Right.
I mean, you know,
right,
and then the world. So,
yes.
So it would be very despairing mm-hmm. in some ways. But, you know, but Ernest Holmes, you know, talks about intention, you know, with purpose and drive and passion, then our beliefs can come to fruition or
right.
to manifest. And
right.
so, you know, my intention is to be kind every day.
Wow.
To every child.
Wow. Can I show you something?
Uh-huh.
I didn't know you were going
to
say that.
Oh.
Look what I
there
wore.
You go.
Look what I
That's
wore.
That's my intention.
Yeah. I also have, by the way, see if I can find it. Well, I have my Be Kind mask.
Yes.
Yeah, but I turned it around and got lipstick on it because there was a day I didn't want to be kind. So now now it has lipstick all over it. But so I wear it turned around most of the time. But anyway, did not mean to steal your thunder.
No,
so
that's
your
right.
So your intention is to
be kind.
And
that feels very manageable.
Because it's always possible to be kind.
It's always possible to be kind. It's always possible to be kind to children.
Yeah.
Even when they seem mean-spirited.
Really?
Okay. Even when they're biting you
okay.
or kicking you
when
in the shins.
When they're biting you,
yeah. You can be kind.
Yeah.
You can also be quick on your feet.
Yeah.
But
right. Get away.
Get away.
Right.
But, you know, when we... You know, when we see, as Ernest Holmes said, there is nothing to be healed, only God to be revealed, you know, mm-hmm. and so when we see the face of God in these children,
yeah.
We can be kind.
Yeah.
And it also means being kind to the teachers and the child care providers
right.
that work minimum wage or very, very little money.
Yeah.
They sometimes are there at 6 o'clock in the morning, sometimes they have to stay until 6 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
They do it 5 days a week,
yeah.
long hours. And so when they're feeling a little frustrated or they don't feel, you know, they feel short-tempered, it's, mm-hmm. you know, to be kind to
yes.
them.
Yes.
You know, what they're doing,
yeah.
their service. So my intention is to be kind.
Uh-huh.
And I believe that kindness will make a difference in that child's life.
Yes.
And that will make a difference in the family's life.
And so the family will make a difference in the other family's life, yeah.
And it makes a difference in the whole classroom. You know, yeah. It makes a whole difference. It just makes a difference. You can see it.
Yeah.
See it
make a difference. There are times when just one tiny little drop of kindness can change the energy of a whole room. You know, and you know what that reminds me? You want to hear what that reminds me of?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, what does
Good.
That remind you of?
Because this is not about you. It's about me, of course. But yeah. No, it reminds me of that something that I say in church often, but when I was teaching the Wisdom Jesus class, and one of the things that Cynthia Bourgeau said about the love your neighbor as you love yourself, she made it really clear that phrase, which is from the Judeo-Christian tradition, I mean, Jesus was, you know, love God, love your neighbor as you love yourself, quoting various aspects of the Torah. And she said that it doesn't mean you love your neighbor as much as you love yourself. You know, because many people will say, well, I have to love myself first and then I can love my neighbor. No, it literally means that as you are loving your neighbor, you are loving yourself. And as you are loving yourself, you are loving your neighbor. That there's only one of us here, there's no separation. So as Mary is kind to a child in Step Up Ventura that may even be biting her or kicking her, then she is loving the entire world because there's no separation. And it's also like that thing that I've done up here on several occasions with the water and the cranberry juice, right? Let's say that the water is consciousness. You drop in the cranberry juice, which is just a drop of kindness, and the whole water turns red. And at some point, you cannot separate unless you have, I don't know if you can even do it with equipment, but you cannot separate the cranberry juice from the water. There's no place where the water stops and the cranberry juice starts. They just become one. And that's how kindness, the consciousness of kindness works, is that it's like you take this drop of something potent and you drop it into the conscious field, into the field of experience, and it ripples out and spreads everywhere and touches everything. Even if people aren't aware of it, you know, if you ever make a drink like that, you're probably not like, you know, I don't know if you're making cranberry juice and water. Maybe you're making scotch and soda, right? Something like that. You know, and you can't separate the scotch and the soda, but you're probably not thinking about that at the time. But even if you're dropping a drop of kindness into some vessel, which we might call consciousness, it is going everywhere. It's going everywhere. And that, I think, is the power and the principle that goes unseen that blesses the world. And that as a community, we can learn to trust that. And when we trust it, we start doing it more and more and more and more. And that makes an impact. That raises a consciousness. That inspires others to be kind as well.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the things that I think is so important in the work is that homeless parents are often not... they don't get very much kindness.
Right.
They get a lot of judgment.
Right.
Of they're failing their kids, or how
right.
could they put themselves in a situation that would, you know, hurt a young innocent child.
Right.
And so, the kindness that we can give to the parents, you know, to support them mm-hmm. in them trying, you know, working on self-sufficiency, working on stable housing, mm-hmm. working on a better life for their children.
Mm-hmm.
And just the parents getting their children to preschool every day.
Yeah.
I mean, the effort that it takes
yes.
sometimes just to get their child there is really remarkable.
Yeah.
And so I just feel so much honor and respect
right.
For the parents. And that, you know, that's different than often what they get from out on the streets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Making me... She just keeps making me cry. I don't know what's wrong with me this morning. No, I was just thinking about the idea of humility that that the last shall be first and the first shall be last. You know, how people sometimes see people in dire situations, people who are living in poverty, people who, quote unquote, haven't made good choices in their life. Who knows why people are living in poverty? We don't know. We don't know what's in their hearts. We don't know how difficult it is to navigate the systems that are in place to help folks that are struggling, but in this idea that the last shall be first, society so often sees folks in that category as the last, and they are heroes. They are often heroes. Sometimes they're not, but they are often heroes, given what they have to go through in order just to get through the day, in order to do something simple, like get their kid to daycare and then get to their job on time. It's amazing,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Right. Quick question. This wasn't on your list.
Oh, dear.
But I think you know the answer.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because we've talked about it before. Yeah, the answer is yes. Good job. We've talked about it before. Does being kind sometimes mean setting boundaries?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Good. Okay, we can move on. No.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's so interesting that you ask that because, as I said, the children can be quite aggressive.
Yeah.
Actually, they're angry at the world. They don't have a lot of reason to be happy with big people.
Right.
And trust if they don't trust. So, so there is a lot of aggression.
Yeah.
And one of the kindest things we can do is set a boundary mm-hmm. on that aggression and help them find a way to express their dismay, their despair, their disappointment, their discouragement, their anger in a more connected way.
Right.
Instead of an aggressive way.
Right.
And if we didn't set that boundary, and I say this to kids all the time, my job is to help keep you safe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, your job is to help me keep you safe.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, but if we don't set that boundary, then they don't have a way to really connect with people,
mm-hmm.
And if we're not connected, we don't do well.
We don't thrive if we're
we
not
don't
connected.
Thrive.
Yeah, yeah. So setting a boundary helps people ultimately learn how to connect with people in a way that is sustainable,
yeah.
and in a way that blesses everybody.
Yes.
Can we do that with grown-ups too, or is it
yes,
just for kids?
Yes, we can.
Oh,
we don't
good
have
to
do
know.
Just
okay. It doesn't just apply with kids. So setting a boundary is helpful for
and
the person
kind.
And kind. Yeah, yeah. I guess it's part of it depends on the way you set it too.
Yes, that's
yeah.
true.
Yeah.
And you know, some of it is the belief mm-hmm. that the boundary is going to work,
uh-huh.
you know, is going
right.
to help and be helpful. But setting a boundary other than out of love mm-hmm. and from an energy of love is just a punishment.
Setting a boundary if the energy is not love is a punishment.
Yeah.
Right.
And children and many people in this room have been punished enough.
Yes.
You know, the field of mental health has proven that punishment doesn't work. If it did, the prisons would be, you know, empty because
yeah.
people would, you know,
yeah.
Be punished and then go about their ways and never sin again.
Right,
you know,
right.
Never do anything wrong again. So.
So punishment doesn't work.
Punishment doesn't work.
Punishment doesn't work, but a boundary set with loving intentions and allowing consequences
yes.
works. Yeah. Yeah. So the board told me that they're going to punish me if I keep checking my emails on Mondays.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
Doesn't work.
So it won't work.
It already hasn't worked. The board wants me to take a little time off so for my own mental health.
Yeah.
Yeah, just funny because the word yeah. punishment came up in my life recently because of that. But that is really, really good to remember and really counter to what we call in this teaching, race consciousness. The race consciousness is, if I just punish you enough, you're going to get it someday, right? What if we were to shift that?
Yeah.
And to say again really clear so it's clear for everybody. What's the new way of looking at that?
Well, setting a boundary in kindness and with love allows connection,
mm-hmm.
allows a person to find a different way
mm-hmm.
to express their feelings and to connect.
Okay, so it allows them to find a different way and it's a win-win for everybody, right? It's very much a container for what in the center we talk a lot about is the third force, right? The opposites, the affirmative factor and the denying factor.
Yeah.
I want this kid to stop hurting people, this kid wants to hurt people, they're pressing against each other. The ego's way of doing it would be for the bigger person to smush down the younger person, right? The third force way is to hold that tension and do something different, allow something different to emerge, which is a boundary set with love that allows greater connection. How about that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to have to work on that, but you know, it's something to aspire to. So, I'm curious now, do you have any stories about how an act of kindness or an act of generosity from either you or somebody else made a difference in somebody's life?
Well, I'll talk a little bit about a child.
Okay, sure.
There's a little girl, and I don't know if you've ever been on the grounds of a preschool, but mm-hmm. anyone over 4 feet is like a magnet for children.
You know? Really? Okay.
So, yeah. So any adult that walks on the grounds, you know, kids come and they hang on you and, you know, want your attention uh-huh. and things like that. And this little girl was pretty persistent. Every time I came on, she would come up and run and hold on to my hand and start dragging me places
uh-huh.
Because she was very nonverbal.
Okay.
Lots of trauma, lots of difficulty behind, just not good early childhood stimulation, so behind in speech and language. but she would kind of drag me around. So when I came one day and she wasn't there to greet me, I usually go and make a point of greeting all of the children and say hello and how happy I am to see them. And I looked around and I found her sobbing underneath the slide.
Oh.
Great. So I get down on my hands and knees and crawl under the slide and join her. And she's crying because no one wants to play with her.
Oh.
And that loneliness, she was feeling such rejection and loneliness. And so I just held her a little bit and talked about how hard it was to feel lonely and how it's hard when we don't have friends. And she started feeling a little better because I asked her what she would like to do, and she said she would like to skip. So we skipped around. So pretty soon other kids came and joined because, you know, that looked like
skipping
fun.
Skipping is fun.
Skipping is fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so we were skipping. We did another round around the playground, and we had about five or six kids skipping around with us.
Mm-hmm.
And then at one point I let go of her hand, and other kids joined her.
Mm.
And it was such a feeling of, you know, her speech is not good. The kids don't relate to her very often, but they were able to, you know, just, you know, the kindness of us doing that, me being kind to her and spending some time with her, and then other children coming and joining her. And it just was a beautiful sight, you know, to see. And so then a couple of days later, I came onto the playground, and I heard a little boy's voice saying, "Come on, Rena, let's go swing." And I thought, you know, she didn't even pay any attention to me, which was so good
because
she was running after a playmate that was including her.
I love that story. I love that story. And, you know, it's not like skipping is a magic bullet, right? Like if we're struggling with someone, I know, I'll skip. How about that? No, it's the intention behind the skipping, right?
Yeah.
The intention behind the skipping that drew in all of this extra love and kindness, and that actually, you know, it's one of the most beautiful things. It's hard to put into words, but when there's a thing in ministry, when the congregation can speak the vision back, then you know you've done your job. And it's like when the action surpasses the person who started it, you know, that you started the skipping, but it went beyond you. That's a sign that it's working.
Mm-hmm.
I'll share with you one of my thoughts about Step Up Ventura, because as we're getting ready to we're launching this program. You'll see in the social hall we've got a Christmas tree with ornaments on it. And one of the things that's unique about Step Up Ventura is that that when we provide them with Christmas gifts, you have an opportunity to pick up an ornament and look at the name on it and buy a gift for that child, but not only the child, for the family. So you can partner with people, and you can buy a present for the parents and for the siblings, so that the whole family gets at least one present to open on Christmas. And
and let me say,
yes, go ahead.
The reason we do that is because when we would ask parents, what do you want your child to have for Christmas that you're not able to provide?
Yeah.
And they would give a list.
Yeah.
And then I say, and then what would you like for Christmas? Oh, no, just be sure that my child has something.
I know.
So I would say, no, I really want to be sure that you get something. Oh, it's not important. Just, you know, so to me, it's really important
that the parents are denying it because they care for their children, but we get to honor them too. And the part that was going to make me cry was that, you know, I looked at the list from last year, and there was a mother that asked for shampoo. And I think about what it's like for me when I need shampoo. I go on Amazon and I push a button and it comes to my doorstep, or I go to the grocery store and I go to, you know, Sally's Beauty Supply, and I just buy shampoo without even thinking of it. But this mother put it on her Christmas list, and it wasn't even like Paul Mitchell. It was like it was like inexpensive Suave. I think it was a step up from Suave, but anyway, it was inexpensive shampoo. And I just thought, wow, it just reminded me so much of what I have, what perhaps we have, and what I take for granted in life. And so, you know, it's that thing about the last shall be first and the humble shall be exalted. It's like, I just have such, I don't even know who she is, but I have such love for that mother who had the courage to change my life by asking for shampoo on her Christmas list. So, I don't know, Mary, what else do you want us to know? Anything else?
Well, you know, I think of Ernest Holmes, you know, saying that faith, you have to put action.
Yeah.
You have to take action to your faith for things to manifest or for your beliefs to come out, show through. And for me, I mean, I would have never guessed that I would be working with this population.
Right.
It just amazes me.
Yeah.
Putting action to our faith.
Yeah.
Is just really important.
It's, you know, faith is just a concept without action. Yeah. It's just a principle. And there is a reason why many of the faiths talk about how spirit has to become matter, so matter can become spirit. The word has to become flesh and dwell among us. That doesn't apply to one person, by the way. It applies to whatever principles that we have. They have to become flesh so that they can dwell among us. It's why we have a realization step in the five-step prayer that we teach here. It's to make it real. It's to make the word real. And it makes the void, the idea of this emptiness become form, you know? And that's just a huge part of the creative process. And we get to become conscious contributors or conscious and constant participants in that as we're willing to take the principles that we teach of love and kindness and goodness and generosity and put them into form. So, you know, it's my hope that there's a bunch of tags on that tree. It's my hope that we'll need to get some more for next Sunday because everybody's going to take one. I had to control myself. I wanted to take one, but I'm like, no, save them for the congregation. Take one if there's a leftover. But I think we can make a real difference in the life of the families of Step Up Ventura. Is there anything else that you want us to know, Mary?
Well, I think one of the questions you had on the list was, what would a miracle be?
I don't know.
I think. Something like that? You had a question about a miracle.
How can we be the miracle?
Oh,
yes.
How can you be the miracle?
Yes, how can you be the miracle?
That's it. I think, as you said, the holiday time for these families is really a challenge. And it's so... it's just so heartwarming when you see these kids going home with little, wrapped presents, or the parents, you know, picking the presents up, and it's a miracle. It's a miracle that we can care that much.
Yes, yes.
That our hearts can be touched.
Yes.
That deeply.
That we can care enough.
That's the miracle.
That's a miracle. It's what Jonna spoke about when she lit the menorah. Yeah. It goes with so many different traditions. It certainly goes with ours. And I really thank you for amplifying that for all of us, because it gets obscured in all of the static that's in the world right now with all kinds of concerns. But the truth is that we can really be the miracle for somebody.
Yeah.
And that means a lot. That means a lot. It's like the starfish story that Hugh told. Mm-hmm. We pick up a starfish, we throw it in the water, it means something to that. And as we are throwing the starfish or the miracle into the sea of consciousness, others start to take notice, and they are the miracle too. We can all be the miracle for one another and for all beings. I think we're complete. So let's give Mary some love. Thank you so much. Good job.